I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
This week over on the Guitar Nerds Patreon episode, we are talking about the gear of the year from 2006. Remember that glorious time? Dragon Force were in the charts. Red Hot Chili Peppers were doing stuff. You can hear our thoughts about that time over at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $5 a month gets you the extra episode where we talk about stuff that we can't talk about on the regular podcast. patreon.com/guitar nerds. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this morning by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Joe Branton.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Why have I been relegated?
You're lowest in the league now. Literally, I just looked around the circle and that's.
That's not how it works.
Joined this morning by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Joe Branton.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Why have I been relegated?
I feel like we're in a loop here.
I was trying to work out this morning, out of the four of us, in what order did people wake up?
Okay, go on then. That's good, because it is early this morning. We're recording on Sunday morning again, which is becoming a new Guitar Nerds time slot. I was up at about half five, 6 o'clock with cat noises.
Excluding cat, because you can go back to sleep after a...
I didn't go back to sleep, mate.
Okay, I'd say you probably got up first, although I did technically get up earlier. But I went back to bed. And then I would say maybe me, then Jay, then Joe.
What time did you get up, Matt?
I got up at 7:15.
Well, you'd be wrong then, wouldn't you? Because I got up at 7:14.
so annoying. Joe Branton probably got up at 10 minutes before now.
Well, I was assuming 100%. We were supposed to start at 9, and I assume Joe got up at 9:10.
Can I just... I left the house at nine. Let me tell you, if the Guitar Nerd, if the four of us heard this conversation 5 years ago, we would all be so upset with ourselves, except for Mark, who hasn't changed since like you were about 19.
I used to get up early, not when I was 19. I used to get up early for school because I wanted to watch The Big Breakfast from the beginning before I left.
Two Lockkeepers Cottages, Old Port Lock, London E3, 2NN.
Exactly that. So, as you can hear, all four of us are back in the room. And what scintillating conversation this is.
Last week we're reminiscing about the fact that we're up. Actually, I think I was up earlier.
I was up first.
No, I was up earlier. I'm the most responsible adult.
Someone raised a good point earlier because Jay's got a South Park mug here. Who would we be if we were the characters of South Park? I'm going to put that out to the Facebook group. And I thought I'd raise it early in the pod because that's when most of you are listening. So go onto the Facebook group.
Joe Branton hasn't offended anybody.
Yeah, go onto the Facebook group.
And, I haven't bored anyone to tears.
Much like we did before with the Ninja Turtles. Tell us who would be who in the South, out of the four South Park boys. I'm guessing Joe Branton's going to be Cartman, surely.
Why?
Just sort of most annoying, the most controversial figure.
The main character.
Maybe. we all know that Stan's dad is the main character. Come on, he's the best. As you can hear, we're all back and ready to roll for another exciting week of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Not so much to cover in terms of news this week because, well, it's a bit of a weird one because it was Music Messer this week, which normally in the past few years has meant bumper episode of news, loads of new products released. This year, I think basically it was one thing.
Oh my goodness.
That was relevant to the podcast.
But it's not just the releases, it was the whole thing. It's any video footage or it was just photos nothing. From Music Messer looks. It looks quiet.
Yeah.
It looked terrible.
Yeah, the only thing that I saw was the guy who runs Effects Database, Disco Freak, I think his name is. He went and did a video like panning around the amplifier room, and there was like three people in there, and this yeah. was like when the show was open. And I saw in his comments, someone said, "Oh, you know, I'm planning on going. You know, do you think I'll be able to see it all in 2 days?" And he basically said, "I did the entire show in 2 hours." So, yeah, it doesn't bode well for Music Messer.
I guess the thing is that NAMM is obviously not cheap.
Yeah.
Most manufacturers, unless they're a huge, you know, company or corporation, are quite small outfits, and most of them are based in America.
Yeah.
So it's not worth the expense of, like, Ryan from Fuzzrocious, like, coming all the way to Europe.
I actually also think that door swings the other way as well. Flights to America have become so cheap.
Yeah.
Like 10 years ago, it would have cost £1,000 a person to go. This year, what did we spend? Like £300 a head to go out there?
Yeah, not
it's,
even that.
It's so affordable to get to the States for the European and UK people now that everyone from this end might as well do NAMM because it's bigger.
Having said that, the role of these shows, I think, has changed. Where before, they would obviously be a sales event because, you know, if you were a music shop in, I don't know, wherever, Missouri or whatever, you you wouldn't have the internet to find out about these things. You'd rely on a rep to come round, and then you'd go to the show to see what the new things were that you would be purchasing for that year. Whereas now, it's much more of a marketing event, and it's much more about, you know, influencers yeah. coming in and independent PR sources and things like that. They want one place to go to where they can see basically everything. And most of that's based in the States, and it's much more expensive for those people to come here than it is for us to go to NAMM. And also, yeah. Music Messer's a bit of a weird time because it's not that far from Winter NAMM, but it's also not that far from Summer NAMM, which is when? June?
End of last
weekend of June.
Days.
Right, okay.
Yeah, last weekend of June.
So it's not that far off, is it? And how many manufacturers have gone, right, we've got a new product at Winter NAMM, and we've got a new product for Music Messer, and we've got a new product for Summer NAMM. It's not really likely, is
only, it? Only, you know, as I guess we'll see in the news, only the absolute biggest companies are the people who can gear up for that sort of thing.
Definitely.
You know, I also saw some things. Henning Paulie put up a couple of pictures that he was taking of sort of round the side from where they'd walled off the hall to show that there was exactly the same amount of space again left over that wasn't being used, that was being fake walled off.
Yeah,
I mean, and
they probably weren't. It's not like they were covering that up. I don't think that's like a scoop.
Oh no, it's not that. No, it's not a scoop. It's not that they were hiding it, but it's just like, wow, that has shrunk.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if they'll just change venue next year if it happens at all. Because you know, I do think there is a role for a show in Europe, but I just think the timing is odd because, you know, with so many brands putting everything into Winter NAMM and then some of them then doing Summer NAMM, not even everyone does that. Most people just do Winter NAMM. It is a bit weird to then have this kind of smaller show that is logistically more difficult for big brands to attend.
It's weird, isn't it? Because the NAMM hall is so massive.
Yeah.
That if you wanted to do something in Europe, you need somewhere of like equal size.
Well, or do you, or is it a more, you know, do these things come down to more targeted events? You know, is there like a pedal summit or something where it's just pedal manufacturers?
I still miss the one in Birmingham NEC that I went to when I was like 15 or 16 that was absolutely massive.
I don't think there's the need for that anymore, you know, because most retailers and most press and stuff go to NAMM, so I don't know how that show would survive. You know, we've obviously got things like the London International Show and the Birmingham Show, which are much smaller events, but they're mainly, you know, they're aimed at consumers. They're not buying events at all, and they're not really PR events. They're just kind of a nice thing to do.
They're enthusiast events as much as anything.
They're a nice thing to do on a Sunday, basically.
Yeah, they're a chance for smaller boutique manufacturers to go and get their products in front of people who might not otherwise see them. I think the thing is, it is a shame because shows are really cool. They're really
definitely.
Fun. You walk around and you see new stuff and you see interesting stuff. But it's just the way that people find it comes down to what you say, like, but the way that people find out about gear is so different now.
Yeah,
most of the time punters know about stuff before people who work in shops do.
Yeah,
that was certainly the case when we were working in the shop, even though we were people who were actively engaged and looking for this stuff. If you follow Fuzzrocious on Instagram, you probably know that they've released a pedal before the person that works in your local guitar shop does.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's just there's no need to try and get people to try and get the big shops to buy your gear. It's just about marketing it to a certain degree and making it fun and making yourself seem approachable and a brand that people want to invest in emotionally.
So be interesting to see what happens with Music Messer over the next couple of years, whether it morphs into something else, which is, from seeing it this year, I expect that's what they'll do.
They have a big like pro audio show there as well, don't they? Isn't there like a big part of it that's lighting and side of things?
I think that's what Music Messer is. I think there's all that stuff as well.
Yeah, but my understanding
but there's competition for that as well.
Right,
there's something
that's
better. Like, I was speaking to the fellas in Yamaha UK, and they now go to, for all their pro launches, there's another one quite close to Mesa that's not, I couldn't tell you what it's called, but that's where
more sort of like not install PA type thing.
No, not Munich, okay.
Yeah, and a lot of these brands go to IFA as well, which is the technology show in Germany. You know, there's so many opportunities to get it out there. It's, and I guess it's more, for a lot of these brands, it's what's going to get more mainstream press coverage. And, you know, IFA definitely gets more mainstream press coverage. So if you've got a product that transitions between the kind of pro and consumer electronics world, then IFA is definitely where you would go. You wouldn't necessarily go to Music Messer. So let's see what happens over the next couple of years. Having having said that, there has been some news from Messer. Some news. Wait, we'll get to it. And there's been some product releases from Music Messer and elsewhere this week. So we should dive into a whole big old list of
news.
I like it. That was like someone running from the disc, like from the horizon up to the up
with
to
some,
your camera
with some news. I reckon that's what the it's the Brighton Marathon today. Joe took Joe forever to get here in a taxi because
a lot of the roads are closed
and
two of the roads are closed.
Well, yeah, you know, but I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. I just kind of imagine that sound that you made there is what happened when the original marathon happened, because obviously the original marathon was some geezer running from Athens to Marathon, I think, is the
other way around.
Marathon to Athens.
Yeah,
he ran from.
I think he ran to Athens to tell them of the victory of the war.
Right. Yes, I think you're right, and I can just imagine that just as he gets there, he's just going news, and he tells them, and then he died, didn't he? So, you know,
did he die?
He died after running. I think maybe he ran back. I can't remember. I'm sure he died,
you know,
though.
So he died when they landed and went, you know what we should do? We should make this an annual challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Who was the first person who went, yeah, that guy, he ran for ages and then died straight away. What I think we should do is try it again and see what happens. Yeah, it's not for me. So, big bit of news this week from Line 6 with the announcement of the PowerCab 112 and 112 Plus. Joey B, you've been following this story closely.
Yes, what an absolutely fantastic product for Line 6 to release. Like, this is completely, totally on the money. This has changed the face of the Helix and how the Helix can be used. What a great idea.
So it's an FRFR cab.
Well, it's so much more than that.
Okay.
But yes, it is. But it's, I mean, it's an FRFR cab with power amp in it. So now that cab and the Helix has become all that you'd need to take to a show. I mean, you know, what are you laughing at?
You got so animated about this on the Facebook group. And
I did.
You were so unwilling to listen to anybody's concerns or criticisms of the fact that might still want to use a real amp, you know.
This is now a real amp. I mean, I think for me,
no, it's not. Like, you can't just say that and then just gloss over it no one picks up on it.
No, it's an excellent way to change the way the Helix is being used. I think the only criticism of this is coming from sort of a position of small-mindedness. This is like
honestly,
you can dislike the way it sounds, but as a concept, You either don't get it because you're an idiot, or you understand it and you go, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
So the thing that, so there's two models. The thing that I didn't understand is one of them has got cab modelling in it.
Yeah.
Okay, so explain that to me.
So it's not cab modelling. You're wrong. Because cab modelling would be like, it's a 112. Cab modelling would be like, use this to make it sound like a 412. It doesn't have anything like that. That's not the idea.
Okay.
It has speaker cone emulating.
Okay.
So it emulates six popular speakers. So, you know, Greenbacks, okay. Creambacks, Vintage 30s.
And that's only in the Plus?
I think that's in both, actually.
What's the difference with the Plus?
It's in both, I think.
Oh, is it? Is it only in the Plus? Yeah.
No, it's in both, but the Plus has...
an LCD screen where you can...
It has the Line 6 link.
Yeah.
Which I think is for use with their PA system. And,
okay.
And a USB audio interface.
Right.
And a display and presets.
Fine.
And custom IR loading, I think, in the speaker section.
See,
and MIDI.
So all that stuff makes sense to me, mm-hmm. because that is more than just a standard FR setup does.
Yeah. Well, it introduces the power amp.
FRFRs have power amps.
Yeah.
Oh, do they?
Not just speaker cabs. No, yeah. An FRFR is a full range, you know,
flat
speaker.
Uh huh.
But it's got a 500 watt power amp in it. So you're amplifying the sound of your modeling unit without changing the tone that's coming from it. So the power cab really is only, to me, seems designed for the Helix, because you can link the Helix to it and then do the cab modeling,
yeah.
or the speaker modeling, but you're only modeling a 112. So what if you want to use the 412 modeling from a Helix and the power cab? Then you have to disable the 412 modeling and then just go through a 112 FRFR.
Yeah, so what the thing that I think people were trying to get across to you, Joe, in the Facebook group is... you could essentially just buy a Mackie SRM 450,
yeah.
And it does exactly the same job as the standard one, not the Plus, because that is doing something else.
Sure.
What you don't have, obviously, is the different speaker modelling. But then at the same time, surely the Helix has that built in. So
not the speaker cone modelling. No, it models a few different types of cabs.
What's the price difference between the 112 and the 112 Plus?
I think it's like £500 and £700.
Something that like seems that. Like a lot of money to go, actually, you know what, for this song, I want it to sound like Vintage 30s. Mm.
That's in both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think the standard one's going to be by far the most popular. I mean, if it's £500 for that, you can get an LT now for £750.
But is this not... are you not just plugging... instead of plugging the Helix into a PA, you're plugging it into a monitor, essentially?
Almost, but because it has speaker cone emulation on there, because it's actually going to sound like a cab, is this for
live use as opposed to for recording?
Yeah.
But how is this different to going into like a power amp and then into a cab?
It's not.
I think what that's the,
and that's what that's what's great. That's what I really like about it. If I was going to get a Helix, I would not want to be plugging into a PA. I'd want to still have a cab and use it as an amplifier. I'd be wanting to take advantage of all those effects on the Helix. And
but you can do that into a PA speaker.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to, and I don't think a lot of people want to plug into a PA. Literally, just tech metal bands. I wouldn't want to, and the only reason I wouldn't get a Helix is because I'd be like, well, I don't really want to have to take a cab and a power amp.
But I don't understand what the difference is. You're basically getting exactly the same result for if you were going to plug into the power cab, the normal one, the Plus. I understand has other functions as well. But what is the difference?
Is it that you don't need to take... For example, you can take the Helix and then you can take a power cab. Instead of taking the Helix, your, for the sake of argument, DSL and Marshall 4x12. Is that essentially what...
No, because if you use a Marshall DSL, you have to turn the effects off in the Helix. I guess the idea is that some people want a cab behind them.
Yes.
But the thing is that no one would mic up that power cab because people want the emulation of a 412 through the PA. So you're going direct out of the power cab into the front of the house anyway. That's what a sound guy is going to do. So I think it's just for people who want the air feel of a cab.
But you,
on
again,
stage,
but if you
but they're
just,
still going into a PA.
But if you still just put an SRM 450 behind you instead of a guitar cab, it would do the same thing. So that's what I think it's a neat package because it looks like a nice guitar cab, and you know it obviously is designed to work with the Helix. But what I'm saying is, I don't think this is anything revolutionary over just plugging in. It's a nicer way of delivering the same result that you'd get with plugging into an SRM 450.
I think it's changed. It has made this accessible to people who would be more traditional with how they would want to have their setup on stage.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I
would be happy to mic this up on stage. That it would be fine. It's kind of it's making everything else. So I can find on the Helix.
But what I'm saying is, why would you mic it up? What's the point of doing that?
Why wouldn't you
just come straight out
of
the Helix?
Yeah, yeah, fine. You could absolutely do that. But you have the option to use this in a more traditional way.
Sure.
Because you've now got access to all those effects.
Yeah.
And you can find the right amp sound for you without it having to mean that you have to have that super modern metally setup where you're going through a PA.
But all this literally is a PA speaker in a guitar cab.
Yeah,
with speaker modeling.
Yeah, that you can make sound like a guitar cab. So now,
but that's what the Helix does. As
yeah,
standard.
I know. But now it's like an amp behind you. I don't understand why this is a problem. It's made the Helix
it's
into
not a
an
problem.
Amplifier.
I'm just saying. All I'm saying is this is it's just a FRFR. There's nothing more. Yeah. I mean, obviously you can do this. The what they're kind of claiming is different speaker modeling, but the Helix does that in the Helix.
Well, it doesn't. It does cabs. It doesn't do speakers.
But sure.
I think the idea with the speaker modeling is it's probably trying to model the dynamic response of a speaker, where an FRFR cab doesn't necessarily have much of a dynamic response. It's just amplifying what's coming out of your modeler. So I'm assuming the speaker modeling in the power cab is designed to model like the push and pull and the actual kind of cone cry, like the aux box in a 1x12, which is something the Helix doesn't actually do. The Helix just models
right
cabs.
In that case, that makes more sense.
But do you not like that idea that you can set this up with, like, you can make this cab into a vintage 30, and then using the Helix, you can have your sort of baseman.
Yeah,
I've never really paid that much attention. Like,
I think the problem for me is that people are so used to now taking the Helix and plugging into a PA system, and they've set their sound up, and they know it's going to sound exactly like that, whether they plug into headphones, whether they plug into their studio monitors, or if they plug into an FRFR, you're now adding another element that you have to program. To me, that seems rather strange.
But I think
it's for a different type of player. Like, I wouldn't have bought the Helix before this came out, but now I might.
But I don't. Why would you not just buy an amp?
What? Oh, come on, mate. That's because I've got 100 amps here in this. It's that versatility.
But I don't understand what the difference of being able to switch out the speaker in the cab actually makes to you. I don't understand that. Because most players will just get a Helix, you know, they'll go out to the PA. So say they want like a, I don't know, like a Tweed Champ or something like that. That's going out to the PA, and then you're feeding that sound into a 112 that's got a completely different speaker sound in it to the one that's going out to the PA. I don't understand that.
Well, I'm guessing you've got to turn an element of modelling off on the Helix.
Yeah, I think...
But then you can't take the line out to sound how you want it to sound. That's where this
gets
confusing.
Unless there's a...
Well, yeah, but then you've got a completely...
Like essentially an effects loop, not an effects loop out, but like an
effects
out.
You probably
can
do that, but then you've got a different sound coming out of the front of house than you've got coming out of
the behind
the cab that's on stage, which I don't... That's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an odd concept.
I think overall it's a cool product, but it's just a niche...
I guess maybe what this is it's offering people the opportunity to use this in a venue which may be the sort of place that we play, where you don't necessarily have a decent PA. You know, if you're going to a back room of a pub where you can't really line into stuff, you need to put everything through the amps. Maybe, you know, this is giving an option for there while still giving the aesthetics of a normal setup, quote unquote, you know?
I just really want to have a look at the back panel, but the problem is the website constantly flicks through all the angles. I'm like, can you just stop and just so I can have a look exactly what it looks like?
I feel like I need to do a bit more reading to see what their test case for this is. Like, what are they saying this is for? Because that's what I don't understand. I don't really get it yet. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do some more reading on it and find out who they're aiming this at and what the general feedback is. Because at the moment, the feedback, I think, on our Facebook group is everyone's like me going, I don't understand this.
Yeah.
Except for Joe Brandon, who's like, this is the greatest thing that's ever been invented by a company ever.
I mean, I don't know how your guys' memories are so short. Like, we have literally had conversations about how this would be a good product to couple with the Helix. It's come out, and all of a sudden, everyone's like, oh, I don't know why they've done that. We have had conversations about them releasing.
But I would understand
this.
It if it was just, okay, we've put a PA speaker, essentially, in a nice-looking cab, and you can have this on stage, and you're still getting the sound out that you get out the front through the cab that you've got. I would understand that.
I think the ultimate issue with things like the Helix is that you can't plug into the front end of an amplifier.
Yeah.
So this kind of allows you to do that.
Yeah, yes.
But right now the problem is look, from my memory of the interface, is that you'd then have to disable the cab modelling in the Helix, which means you then can't have the sound of a 412.
Surely we're just getting this. I feel like we're sort of going around in circles here. That can't be the case.
It is the case.
That can't be the case.
It literally says it in the Line 6 write-up that you would turn off the cab modelling of the Helix when
using
this.
That's really, really weird.
But that so that seems like if I
that
if,
seems if that seems like an oversight as much as anything else.
No. So basically, that would mean to me that what they're thinking this is for people who are at home, who never want to hear the modelling, don't want to use the modelling out of
the
amp.
They just want to use the power amp.
They just want to use the effects that are in there and the preamps, and don't want to use any of the amp modelling. Not necessarily the cabs.
Yeah, because you'd still use the amp modelling.
Sure, you still use the amps, but you wouldn't use the cabs.
We're talking about turning off one of the smallest, you know, least important parts of the Helix.
Yeah, but also it's kind of why the Helix exists. It's kind of why modellers exist, so that you don't have to plug into a cab. It's a weird product. Let's do some more reading. We'll talk about this more next week, because I feel like we've dwelled on it long enough without knowing exactly who they're aiming this for, which is the key thing about this product.
I'm going to do my favourite thing and read the manual.
He loves it. Matt, before you do that, do you want to tell us about the new limited edition Black Walnut Martin Acoustics launched at Music Messe this week?
Yes, one of only a few things that were launched at Messe. Just doing a bit of reading into it. It's not even on Martin's website yet, and they haven't actually announced a spec, so I think it's more of like a teaser launch.
Okay.
It's going to feature the Fishman Matrix VT Enhanced Electronics. They promised that the Woods will produce clear, bright trebles and the perfect amount of bass, which I think is what every acoustic company it's going to be. It's going to have really clean highs. It's going to be, you know, really bassy. It's going to be lovely. And they're doing a Dreadnought model and a Grand Performance model, and that is it so far, but in a nice fetching black walnut wood.
I love when
limited
you go to
edition as well.
I love when you go to the Martin booth at like NAMM or whatever, and they've just got loads of limited edition stuff that you'll never see in a shop, but it all looks absolutely incredible. Same with Rickenbacker. When you go there and they've got like all of the like Laredo models and stuff like that, you'll never ever see them out in the wild, but it's
normal Rickenbacker for that. Well, yeah.
I mean, not even that, but they had like a 5-string 4003.
Yeah.
They had 3 5-string 4003s there.
The chances of like, ever seeing one.
I didn't even know that they did 5-string versions of these, let alone that they'd ever made 3.
Yeah. Yes. It's good to see those things, but it's a shame that you'll never see them in stores. Talking of something else, a new guitar launch this week. J. Cross, brand new Fender model, 58 Jazzmaster.
Yeah, I think this is something that we all saw coming, you know, a couple of years ago when it was, okay, wow, it's the 60th anniversary of the Jazzmaster this year. You know, what's going to happen? Of course, 60th anniversary Jazzmaster comes out.
Yeah.
Really cool. Saw these at NAMM. And they're like announced and readily available, I think.
What's what's the spec?
So it is based on a, you know, exact sort of replica of the 58 Jazzmasters. So Sunburst, gold anodized guard, vintage voiced single coil Jazzmaster pickups,
black pickups as well.
Yes, 725 radius board, so you know, not for everyone, but nitro finish. They look fantastic. They sound fantastic, and yeah, based off of the the pictures that came out at NAMM, I think it's the first in a cool line of Jazzmasters that we'll see this year.
Yeah, and this is this is not custom shop made. This is just regular.
It's a regular US guitar.
Price wise,
Just shy of $2,000.
Okay, where does that fall in comparison to the American originals?
It's kind of in line. The American originals are £1,800.
Right. Okay. So you're paying a little bit for the limited edition. Kind of anniversary nature of it.
American original Jazzmasters are a little less than that, actually. They are £1,500, okay. There or thereabouts.
Blimey.
I mean, personally, I much prefer the look of the new one. I'm into that
really?
58 look.
I never really thought it suited the kind of the gold guard and the black pickups.
Oh, I love it.
I just, you know, a Jazzmaster should be in a surf colour and with a, you know,
I mean, there's definitely room for that. And looking at pictures of the American originals here, they do look stunning. But yeah, I really like that sunburst with the anodized guard and black pickups. The only time that sunburst works for me, I think.
What, with an anodized guard?
Yeah.
Like a 57 P-Bass,
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah,
58 Jazzmaster even.
Yeah, yeah, one of those.
But yeah, I guess the difference here, the main difference that you're looking at between the American original Jazzmasters and the 58 Jazzmasters, other than the aesthetics, is the American originals have got 9.5
yeah,
radius, and they are, I don't think they're nitro finish. No, they are nitro finish. Yeah, sorry, of course, okay, they are. So yeah, I mean, it's that radius, and also the sort of the aesthetics, and the pickups are slightly different. I think the American originals use 65 pickups, as
yep,
opposed to, so they're a little bit, you know,
slightly
woolier
different,
sounding
different,
I guess, voiced. That's what I've always,
yeah,
I've,
they're
always
generally not
it,
as aggressive,
yeah,
sounding.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
But yeah, cool range. It's so funny to think back to when we sort of started doing this, and how when Squire released the all those vintage modified, we were like, oh great, I just wish there was like this stuff, but you know, throughout the range. And now you just look at it, there's just offset, and it, you know, not just Fender, there's just offsets everywhere. They've just become so popular in the last 5 years.
I think it speaks volumes that compared to their competitor, Fender have gone, oh, the audience wants loads of offsets. Let's make that at, like, the price points that they want.
Yeah,
it's, I think it's pretty telling that they're listening to the audience, definitely, and producing the right thing. One last bit of news this week. Matt Knight, tell us about a brand new tremolo pedal from Ernie Ball Music Man.
Yes, we talked very, very briefly about this at NAMM, but it is officially launched worldwide today, available in the US. It's the Expression Series tremolo pedal. I got sent this maybe just after NAMM, I think, and we couldn't really say anything about it until today. It's really cool. I love the idea, because the overdrive, I was kind of like, maybe with delay, it's, you know, kind of cool. But this one, it's nice because it's a reverb pedal on its own without the expression. If you don't want to use the expression on the reverb, you can just have it as a reverb pedal at the end of your chain. But then you can click down and then access the trem function, which you've then got control over rate and depth, either at the same time or individually. All the controls are at the back, sort of nice spring sound, you know, five different waveforms on tremolo. So it's really nice if you want kind of that vintage voiced and styled trem with a bit of reverb, or even if you want something a little bit modern. But it's nice having control over the rate, I think. That was the depth. I was kind of like,
the depth I would just sort of set and forget, but the rate, it was kind of nice to go between sort of slow and fast speeds depending on what you were doing.
So how do you, because of, we should mention that this is in the kind of like rocker style pedal, like an Ernie Ball Junior volume pedal, and so how do you set what the treadle, like the wah, or the, you know, the real-time controller, how do you set what that controls at rate and depth? Is there a switch on the back?
Yeah, so basically all the, I think it's two of the knobs on the back click in.
Okay.
And then there's different little LEDs to tell you which ones you're controlling, basically. So you can't actually like turn them off unless you turn it all the way down, for example. So if you were kind of going for like a vintage Fender vibe, as it were, and you kind of left the spring on all the time, and then you could just control the rate with the trem. Or if you didn't want the trem effect in all the time, for example, you could control the depth and leave the rate uncontrolled by the expression itself, which is, that's quite a cool thing, because then you can have an always on reverb that models like the spring and an amp. And then as you move the expression forward, it fades in the depth of the tremolo, for example. Yeah. Or if you want both on at the same time, or if you don't want at all, the only thing, if you don't want either of them on, but you kind of want to click something on, you'd have to put it in like an effects loop, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, like a little one loop bypass switcher. But I left the reverb on all the time and then just kind of used it for either rate or depth.
No, it's a pretty useful pedal. Again, I kind of has had some reservations about this concept with the Expression Series when they were doing like distortion and stuff, but this makes total sense, you know.
Yeah, this and the delay, definitely. Yeah. Those are the sort of things you want to be able to real-time control.
Definitely.
Yeah. The problem I had with this, because they showed this at NAMM, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I went, and I don't think I was with you when I went to the...
We basically didn't see you for most of NAMM, so...
Yeah, I went, when I had a bit of time on the Sunday, I went to go and check these out, and the thing that put me off was, by the sounds of things, they might have just plugged headphones into the... Like the whatever they were using as an amplifier was just borderline unlistenable,
like non modeling basically.
Yeah, it was just absolutely atrocious. They had all the
drive, the delay,
and the trem. Yeah, and they had all three there, and I really wanted to give them a go, because like you, Joe, I think it's a really cool concept for the delay and for the trem. I agree, Mark, the distortion is a bit weird, but you know, I gave it a go, and it was such a bad setup. It really, really put me off. I thought, I don't want to get anywhere near this. But if Matt, if you're saying that it's worth another look at, then for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think like I'd like to try it at maybe a little bit more volume through a few more different amps and stuff. But as a concept, I thought it was quite nice to be able to like fade in the tremolo, for example, but then have it as an always on reverb.
Yeah, a cool, cool little pedal indeed. I think we've got some pictures and video coming this week. I think that's the plan. Yeah,
I liked what because I think this concept has been quite good. Because is it the shaker? Is that the
that's the TC vibrato?
TC vibrato. They had what's the control called? They had a latching mode where when you held the button down, it would like the effect would fade in and then fade out again. It had like a rate, isn't the right word, but that one of the controls on there would just let it sort of blend in and then blend out again when you...
Yeah.
And it was so fantastic. Like, it sounded amazing. And if you can do that with this, I think it would be great.
I got reminded of a Fender pedal that I don't think we ever probably really talked about, that was discontinued and now goes for a load of money. The Fender Runaway?
I don't remember that at all.
Was the feedback expression pedal. So as you moved the expression forward, it basically latched a note and created natural feedback. It was a feedback simulator.
We're looking at a picture of it now, and this, that looks like the maddest pedal I've ever seen.
This is the most 80s effect pedal of all time.
This came out at the same time as
competition
like
series.
Sublime and all of those ones, I think.
Wow, it looks like something that you would buy that you could put Ninja Turtles action figures into. It's a kind of slime green with like a fake metal expression pedal on it that's clearly, it looks like it's plastic and it's kind of sprayed like aluminium. This is very odd. Do go and check
it
out Fender Runaway
2012. It was, I think it's powered by the same technology as the early Mustangs, I think.
Weird. We should get one of those.
Let's see if I can find one.
And I've also, we obviously won't go into detail about it, I've just been looking at the power cab.
Yeah.
And they actually suggest that you plug your Helix into it and then you go out into the PA. And the idea is that having the cab on stage gives you a real amp feel,
but your modelled sound still just goes through a PA.
Yeah, but then so your sounds really, are going to be totally different.
I think it's just for player feel, because they're saying that if you go straight into a PA, some people don't like the sound because it sounds too recorded or it sounds too unnatural, which I guess is defeats the point of the modelling in the Helix anyway. But the idea of having a cab on stage is you've got more of a real feel speaker behind you that's not a guitar amp, because if you go into a guitar amp you have to turn the modeling off.
Yeah,
so you can basically go into what is effectively a real 112, but then still go out into the PA so the sound guy can still have your modeled sound straight into the PA.
It's a very weird thing. I'm going to do a bit more reading and watch some videos, and we'll talk about it a bit more next week. In the meantime, because we were low on news this week,
interrupt your segue. MXR did also put out a new drive.
Okay.
They put out the Sugar Drive.
Oh, no, they talked about that a little while ago.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah, that's been out for a little while.
It was
an
AM release,
I think. Oh, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
didn't forget that.
No, I saw that because someone else had reviewed it this week.
Yeah, they just landed in the UK. Yeah. So I just had a look. Clon clone, basically.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So, in the absence of much news, I thought I'd put together a little quiz for you boys to fill out the rest of this podcast.
You know that we already do a quiz, right?
Of course, but
you know that we do a quiz and we have like a format for it. It's every 25 or so
sure,
episodes.
But I just wanted to do this because
you know that we have a format for this and it's every 25 or so episodes and it's not your turn.
So because last week, obviously,
you're feeling left out because you're not as smart as Matt Knight.
We missed the podcast.
Oh wait, no, you did win, didn't you?
Yeah,
half a point.
we missed the podcast last week due to WrestleMania. Obviously, we were recording on a different day and something happened at WrestleMania that made me think, I've got an idea for a Guitar Nerds quiz. So
we're going to throw Joe Branton
through the table. Oh, if only. That's the absolute dream. Gentlemen, I'm calling this quiz Stompbox or Wrist Locks. What I've done is taken the name of either a guitar pedal or a professional wrestling finishing move, and you guys have to guess which one it is.
Oh, God.
So, and I'm going to score it on... you basically have to... You say professional wrestling move or you say stomp box. And then I'm going to add up the points and then we'll see who the winner is. So, you'll be surprised just how much crossover there is. And at the end of this, I'm going to read out some... quite a long list of ones that I couldn't use because they are both stomp boxes and professional wrestling moves. So, first up, the graphic...
Who's going first?
We'll go with Matt first. We'll go around. Matt, Joe, Jay. So
anti-clockwise, interesting.
So, the first one, gravity bomb. Matt Knight, professional wrestling move or stomp box?
That. I'm going to say wrestling move.
Okay, Matt says wrestling move. Joe Branton, the gravity bomb.
Definitely a wrestling move.
Jay Cross.
I'm going to go with the differential here and say stomp box.
That is a point to Jay Cross. It is a mini boost pedal by Copper Sound Pedals. Let me just make a note. I need to, Jay.
I've got a pen and paper here.
If you could score it, Matt, that'd be helpful.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, Matt, you can score it. Be fair, be fair. And
I'm always fair. In fact, I'm the fairest.
Okay, so that's 1 point to Jay. No points to you. We'll do...
point to me.
No. Next up, the Anaconda Vice. Matt Knight. Wrestling move or stomp box?
Anaconda Vice. It sounds like it could be a compressor pedal, so I'm going to go with stomp box.
Joe Branton.
Wrestling move.
Jay Cross.
Anaconda Vice. I'm also going to go wrestling move this time.
It is a wrestling move. Oh, compression choke submission hold invented by Hiroshi Tenzin, but most recently used by CM Punk. So that's a point for Joe and a point for Jay. Got next it. Up. The Ultimate Destroyer, Matt Knight.
God, I really hope all of these are wrestling moves because they sound amazing. Ultimate Destroyer.
Pedal or wrestling move?
I'm also going to put in a suggestion for what kind of effect it could be. It sounds like it could be some sort of hum eliminator. So I'm also going to say Stompbox.
Stompbox for Matt Knight. Joe Branton.
What was it again?
Ultimate Destroyer.
I'm going to go Stompbox.
Okay, Jay Cross.
I think that Matt is getting confused with the ISP what was that called?
The Decimator, yeah.
I think it's a Behringer pedal, though. I'm sure there's a Behringer
Ultimate Destroyer. I'm going to say wrestling move.
It is a pedal.
Ah,
the DOD FX16, one of the rarest DOD pedals, is a very, very high gain distortion. I tried to find somewhere where you could buy one or even find out any information, and there's literally one forum where they've got a picture and a spec sheet, and that is it. Like, so many people are saying, yeah, I've never, ever seen this out in the wild. It is incredibly rare.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, next one. So, Matt, that was a point for you and a point for Joe. The next one, hold on tight, wrestling move or pedal? Matt Knight.
I just got a feeling you're going to try and trick us, and I'm going to say wrestling move.
Joe pedal. It's definitely a pedal.
I also think it's a pedal.
It is a pedal, a limited edition pedal by Hofner. It was a bass distortion pedal. The hold on tight.
Wait. We saw some Hofner effects, didn't? Was it you and I that saw them at the at Birmingham Guitar Show?
Yes.
Do you remember those?
Yeah, I did.
They all had like a beat. They were white with like Beatles-y hand-drawn artwork, and then the control knobs were Hofner control. Oh, is
that's
that what
the same
is?
As this one? Yeah, it's like a white pedal with gold text on it with some Okay, next up,
what, the Hofner website is absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, it's not good. Next up, Manite, white noise. Is it a wrestling move or an effects pedal?
Noise. I'm trying to think if there is actually a pedal that created white noise. But then if it's a wrestling move, that sounds like a really odd name for a wrestling move.
Is Stompbox or Wristlock, Matt Knight?
I'm going to go with Stompbox.
Okay, Joe Branton.
Stompbox.
Jay Cross, the white noise.
White noise, I'm going to say... I'm going to say wrestling move.
It is a wrestling move. Performed by Sheamus. It is a modified air raid crash. So that's a point for Jay Cross.
Just so you know, the Hold On Tight is actually a current model.
Is it? Okay, when I was reading about it, it said limited edition.
Yeah, limited edition Hold On Tight. Yeah,
it's probably because still not sold any.
Yeah. This is one of the ones that
I mean, who goes to Hofner for effects pedals?
Yeah,
by the looks of things, it has a Portuguese Man O' War on the...
That's also a wrestling move. Right, next up, the mic cut. Pedal or wrestling move? Matt Knight.
I'm trying to think if there was an electroharmonics pedal. The mic cut. I'm going to go pedal. Stompbox.
Stompbox. Joe Branton.
Stompbox.
Jay Cross.
I'm going to say this is a trick question. Mike Cut is actually a wrestler.
If only. The best name ever. What you
Michael
saying?
Cut.
Michael Cut.
No, I think it's a wrestling move.
It is a pedal. It is a microphone routing pedal by the company Lock and Rock, which I'd never heard of before. But it's basically, so if you're a guitar player and you use a microphone on stage, it's basically a AB switcher but with XLRs rather than...
I'm sure we've talked about that, something similar on the podcast before, like years ago.
Yeah, it's like quite an old pedal, greenies. I think. Yeah, very weird.
Is this
weird.
So you can use a... blah, 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 blah thing.
What?
You know that blah, blah, blah. A voice box thing. Voice box. That's not the right thing.
Talk box. I think it's so that you can have two microphones on stage. And one runs through some effects and one's completely dry.
Yeah, right, you can basically, it's a mic routing system. So you can either have two mics or you can send a microphone out to two different things.
Yeah.
So you could, essentially send it through a pedal chain or things like that.
Yeah.
Next up, the Accolade. Matt Knight, Stompbox or Wristlock?
Doesn't sound like a very good wrestling move.
The Accolade.
Accolade. No, I'm going to say, because I've said Stompbox a lot, so I'm going to say wrestling move. Just taking a punt.
Joe Branton.
Wrestling move.
Jay Cross.
I'm going to say guitar pedal.
It is a wrestling move. Currently employed by Rusev. It's kind of like a modified camel clutch.
Right, okay.
Okay, couple more. Let's do... Okay, the Doom Treader. Stompbox or Wristlock, Matt Knight?
Oh, is that a trick question? Doom Treader.
Is it a trick question? They all sound like both, mate. It's not.
I know, but the thing is, like, some of them sound way more like... there's no way there could be a wrestling move called Doom Treader. But a feeling that it's probably some sort of Stompbox.
Joe Branton.
I wonder if it's a wrestling move by Legion of Doom.
The Doom Treader.
But treading is something you do with pedals.
Exactly. That's why this quiz is so good.
I'm going to go wrestling move.
I'm going to say guitar pedal.
It is a guitar pedal.
No!
It's a fuzz by a company that I'd not heard of before called Zombie Effects Lab.
I've heard of them.
They do like kind of mad themed pedals, basically. And yeah, this is basically a pedal that's designed for doom. It's like super high gain, sludgy sounding overdrive. So yeah, they're a company worth checking out. I'd not heard of them before. Let's do one more. I've got a huge list here, but let's do one more. Matt Knight, the Shining Wizard. Are we saying pedal or wrestling move?
What would it be? Maybe it would be, if it was a stomp box,
it'd be a clean boost.
Would it be a clean boost, or would it be some sort of weird ambient reverb?
Oh, could be. Could be. Yeah, it could be a shimmer only delay reverb.
See, now you said that, I'm sort of, I want Shining, the Shining Wizard.
Yeah. I'm pushing you for an answer, Matt Knight.
Okay,
Shining Wizard.
I'm going to say Stompbox.
Joe Branton.
Stompbox.
Jay Cross.
A wrestling move.
It is indeed a wrestling move.
No!
It's a running knee to the
Matt,
face.
We need to make a shiny wizard.
The shiny wizard is a running knee to the face.
It's a running knee to the face as utilised by Wales' own Nixon Newell, up-and-coming female wrestler. It's, yeah, it's a good move. Before we do the results, I'll tell you the ones that I couldn't use because they are both pedals and wrestling moves. The Jackhammer. The Dirty Deeds.
Oh, the Jackhammer. That is a quintessential Marshall drive. Yep. Everyone's first pedal.
Yeah. The DDT.
The Dirty Deeds is a Seymour Duncan.
Seymour Duncan. Yeah, yeah. The DDT. The Kill Switch, which is the wrestling move.
Electro-harmonics.
The WMD. The Shell Shock.
What's the WMD?
I can't remember who made it, but
it's called the. It's a company called WMD. Makes something called the Geiger.
That's
counter.
It. Yeah, yeah. So, okay. Shell Shock. The Tombstone, which is both.
What is the Tombstone pedal?
I can't remember. I didn't write down who these are by. I just wrote down a list. The Zigzag. And last but
the Zig and Zag.
Last but not least, of course, the Worm. Both
Of course.
The best wrestling move of all time, and the Electro Harmonics Tremolo? Or was it the Worm's like a.
It's a vibrato.
It was a multi effect.
Yeah, it's a multi effect.
Tremolo, vibrato.
Yeah.
And then it had two different types, whirly or. Something else, I can't remember.
I don't know if I've ever told you this before. Maybe I have. I feel like maybe I have said this on the podcast. But once, when I was working in GAC, one of my mates came in to the shop to buy a couple of pedals, and he wanted the Worm, and he also wanted, I think it was a Pog or something. It was two Electro Harmonics pedals. And I went, the shop was quite quiet, but, you know, there was people milling about. And I went upstairs to go and grab the two pedals, brought them down, and I just wanted to check that everything was in there, you know. And so I opened it up, and I pulled the pedal out. And as I pulled the pedal out, a worm jumped out at me, because the Electro Harmonics, I've forgotten that Electro Harmonics include a little rubber worm.
It's so good.
It's like a little toy rubber worm with every worm pedal. And it honestly, it scared the living daylights out of me. I screamed when I saw it. And I think that I'm usually a pretty chilled out fella, but I absolutely lost it. And everyone in the shop saw me scream and jump up because a worm flew out of a box at me.
You're scared of the worm.
Absolutely.
Matt Knight, give us the results then. Give us who came last, who came second, and who came first.
Well, Matt, that last question was actually a decider.
Really?
Okay. Or not. So in last place was myself.
Oh, Matt Knight.
Four. Second place was Joe Branton.
No!
With five. First was Jay with six.
I feel like Jay won this because you two always pick the same answer and then Jay just picked the opposite. So it meant that when you guys got it wrong, he automatically
that
got it right.
That isn't true. That isn't completely true. I went for a couple of differentials. When I wasn't sure, you know, sometimes it's just worth being antagonistic and difficult. Isn't that right, Joe?
Yes.
I want to do more of these because there's other things that I think sound a lot like guitar pedals or guitars that we could do. I don't know, like sci-fi ships or something like that.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, there's plenty to do.
Is it I've got one for you. Guitar pedal or sci-fi ship? The Millennium Falcon.
It's probably both now, I would imagine. Someone.
Incorrect. It's an electroharmonics compressor.
Good. Very good. Very good. Before we wrap up, we should answer a couple of...
questions!
First up, Stuart says, modern day replacement for the Line 6 M5 that isn't the H9. Matt and I, what are we saying?
I don't... Well...
Helix effects?
Yeah, but for the M5.
That's an £80 pedal. Like, yeah. You know.
There isn't one.
Okay.
Well, the M5 is still so good, though. Yeah. The M5 is still... There's nothing else you can get with that much on it for that price that's that high quality. But not many people are doing multi-effects where you can only choose one effect. You know, what else is there? That Moore mod box?
Yeah.
That's discontinued.
Are you want to replace it with something of the same cost, or do you want to replace it with something that does as much that... Because you could say, well, you could use an MS3.
Yeah.
Realistically. And it's got all the effects in it, equal amount of effects and effects loops for external control. But once again, that's the same as the HX, same thing. It's just they're way more money. I think for sub £100, I don't think there is anything.
It's still the best addition to any pedal board if you're working on a budget, basically, because you get pretty much all the effects that are in, like, the Helix effects. Actually, it's a slightly slimmed down amount, but... Obviously, you can only have one on at a time, but a lot of it's in there, and it's, what, £89 or something like that?
Yeah, well, these pedals really come into their own when you use MIDI, because then you've got a bunch of presets, and then if you've got a MIDI switcher, you can then access all those presets without physically having to, like, press up and down through banks and stuff like that. But the H9 is, I think, the top of the pile when it comes to stuff like that. And if you buy an H9 Max, you get every new effect they ever release for free for life.
Yeah.
So how much is a Max?
I think the Maxes are about $550.
Yeah, they're. Like, I mean, it's a serious investment. We're talking about something quite different from the M5 at that point, aren't we? Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. John says, "How does one find out about Fender FSR releases? I've missed some good ones in the past few years." J Cross.
It's a good question, really. I mean, the FSRs can be. They can be any. They can be basically anything. They can sometimes be dealer exclusive. They can sometimes be retailer exclusive. They can sometimes be... that's the same thing. I meant to say region exclusive. So sometimes you get stuff in the US that doesn't make it over to Europe and vice versa. I have... I don't think it's a secret for me to say that I have put my 2 cents in a couple of FSRs that are likely to come out this year, which is very exciting. Watch this space, some very, very cool things on their way. The long and the short of it is you kind of just need to keep your eyes open, because there are, if there's something that's a retailer exclusive, you're only going to see about it if you follow that retailer on social media or on their website. But the thing is that if it's retailer exclusive, it's likely to be a very large retailer.
Yeah.
And there's only a handful in the world who would be able to do a sort of retailer exclusive FSR. Other than that, it's just a case of just keeping an eye out on the Fender Instagram, on the Guitar Nodes forum, because and listening to the podcast, because we'll always talk about them.
Yeah.
When cool stuff comes out.
I think there's kind of accidental retail exclusives as well, isn't there? Where you'll do, I don't know, 10 or 20 of something, and one retailer, a couple of retailers might go, yeah, we want those. And then they're not available elsewhere.
It's rare that there will only be 10 or 20.
Okay. What sort of numbers are there generally on, let's say, an FSR guitar?
There's a lot of variables.
Right.
It's not quite as simple as saying, like, well, there will be 50.
Yeah.
It's not quite as simple as that. It's because it depends on what goes into the guitar. If it's just a simple color change, then it can be not very many. If it's a putting a Bigsby on something, then again, it might not be that many. But if it's doing something quite elaborate, like doing maybe a guitar left-handed, then you need to do a certain amount to make it worthwhile. So it's not quite as simple as just saying, well, there's X amount, but there's. Yeah, I don't really know how to answer how to answer a question, how to find out about them. I think you just need, unfortunately, it's just a case of keeping your eyes open. And the stuff that's cool will get talked about.
Yeah, make sure you follow the obvious retailers on social media, I guess, because that's where it's most likely to pop
up. Yeah, and, you know, same with if you're in the US, sorry, if you're in Europe, it's worth keeping an eye on what, like, Musician's Friend and Sweetwater and GC are doing, because a lot of that stuff does only go there. But it's not to say that it won't trickle over to Europe at some point if there's enough demand for it.
That's it for the show. That's a whole lot of stuff, I feel like, we've packed in there, considering there was kind of no news out of Music Mesa this week. If you want to hear more, over on the Patreon episode this week, we're going to go and finish off what we started last week, which was talking about this down here issue of Total Guitar Magazine, which is the Reader Awards 2006. We talked about some of the ads and stuff in there last week. We're going to talk about the gear that won awards and some of the other stuff that's reviewed in this week. Little flashback to 12 years ago, where the gear scene was there. If you want to hear,
how was the gear scene 12 years ago, Joe?
It wasn't a patch on today.
Joe was bang into the gear scene 12 years ago, from what I hear. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Where from as little as $1 a month, you can get some stuff. You can support even the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early. $5 a month gets you the extra half an hour every week, plus also access to miniseries and exclusive interviews. And the $10 a month means that you go on to our exclusive executive backer tier, which means you get your name read out every show, like these people have, by Joe Branton in one breath.
Mark did it. Mark took a breath.
I took a breath.
Through.
I couldn't do it last week. Okay. I obviously don't have the
lungs.
The lung fortitude that you have.
I do have really large lungs. I have a large rib cage, which I assume means I have large lungs.
Maybe not. Maybe they're tiny in there, but there's just a lot of space around them. What song are we going to do? I don't know. I'll just do this.
No, what's the Doug theme tune? We were listening to Devo earlier before we got here, and Maddie, no, was it one of you said, you know, he did the Mark Mother's Bow,
yeah. Mark Mother's Bow did the Doug theme tune.
I can't remember
how it goes now.
Jurassic.
Ryan McDermott, Rob Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagel, Tucker, Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Emery James Baker, Christoph Ramsey, Sane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Winsor, Martin Glimm, Matt Davis, Aaron Sermon, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Losis, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordwick, Ron Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Collars, Andy Joyce, Carlos Macha, Steve Muggle, Blatt Holmes, Macross, Brad Bay, Janie Short, Annie McKenzie, Laurie Amsterdam, Paul Corrigan, Will Kranz, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moo Gravett, Colin Anderson. I see a few of you have added names in the misguided belief that I would somehow run out of air when I was saying them, but that's not the case. As you can clearly hear, I can get another 10, 20 names in. Ha!
I didn't think you were going to be able to make it this week.
It's
quite impressive.
Totally. After doing it last week, I'm really surprised that a man in such bad physical shape as Joe Branton can actually do it. It's very
big lungs.
Very, indeed.
Huge lungs.
Yeah, Nate
small
pointed
brain.
Out. Nate, lungs.
Nate pointed out that it's Nagel. Where I think I'm going to carry on saying Nuggle. It's almost like Nagal.
Stephen Nagal.
Stephen Nagal.
Sorry, what you've said there is the person who pays us for their name to be read
I'm gonna
out
say their
has
name
complained
as...
that you read their name out incorrectly, and instead of apologising and correcting, what you're doing there is doubling down.
I'm going to say Stephen Seagal instead of Nate Nagel every week from now on.
I'm glad people pay for this. If you want to join in the conversation, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter @guitar nerds, and you can go to youtube.com/guitar nerds videos for some video fun. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Cheers, gang.